So this is another opportunity for questions, and you had one. So there's, I know there's one mic on the chair back there. Would somebody pass it forward? I don't know where the other mic is. But oh, great. Okay. Yeah. You can pass it hand to hand. Or yeah, thanks.
So I've spent a lifetime dealing with horrific mental states since PTSD, incurring a PTSD at age 11. And my life has been pretty much focused on how to deal with this and how to get free of it. And usually it involves when one of these states, I try to bring in positive thoughts or push away negative thoughts or alter the thoughts. And or try to escape to some happy place in the mind, or else distract myself with some outside influence, or try to become someone who is happy, sort of a spiritual bypass. And of late, what's been happening is I'll become aware I'm in a nightmare, and that instead of just being in it and lost in it, I become aware I'm in it. And that kind of turns a light on. Mm-hmm. And then I can see that I don't have to bring in happy thoughts. I don't have to push out negative thoughts. I don't have to change thoughts. I can stay where I am in my mind, and I can be what I am.
So you can be with that experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of turns empty.
Yep.
So it's a good thing.
It is a good thing. And you've been practicing for a long time to get there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are times, at least in my experience, there are times where that kind of shift into, oh, this is what's happening. As I've been saying, it's kind of like you recognize, oh, this is the human experience of someone with PTSD. You know, it takes the I or me out of it. It's just this, of course this is happening. Mm-hmm. Like, this was the condition. This happened when I was 11. This is the condition. Of course this is happening. And that perspective of being able to say, of course, and that's the allowing, basically. It's the allowing of it. It lets something different unfold there.
It's like I can see through it.
Yeah.
I'm not, when I fight it, I'm giving it reality. So, I'm giving it substance.
So when we have the capacity to open to it and allow it, in my experience, that is mostly the most skillful response, when we can open to it and allow it. If we're not sucked into it, you know, if we're not just pulled into the black hole, the whirlpool of it. And there are times, though, that for some people, there are times when that capacity is there and times when it's not there. And so there are times...
Oh, I know about the capacity not being there.
Yeah.
I know all about
and so,
that.
So there can be times when doing something like the useless gazing, mm-hmm, can help to, you know, balance the mind a little bit so that it might be able to do that.
Well, I used to do a lot of feeling the body.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to think of my body as one of those sea lifeboats that's enclosed and it's self-riding, and you're in it and you can just ride things out. So I just used to kind of ride things out in my body.
Yeah, if we can ride them out without, mm-hmm, getting pulled in, you know, that is one of the best approaches, because what happens there is the mindfulness of that experience begins to normalize it to some extent. We begin to see it in a new way, and it's like anything that comes into being in our system has a life. It's impermanent. It will come and it will go if we're not continuing to kind of like put the foot on the gas pedal and say, oh yeah, that's the way it is. Oh yeah, that's the way it is. Oh, that PTSD, this is a problem. Oh, you know, keep putting your foot on the gas pedal. It'll perpetuate. But essentially the shift to receive, allow, that experience. It's like takes your foot off the gas pedal and lets it kind of unfold. It lets your system right itself. And yet sometimes we can't keep from putting our foot on the gas pedal, and so then we need some strategies. So I will talk some more about strategies as we go. I mentioned the one of the useless gazing. The other one that I find, I think often we think of, I should turn to something pleasant, or you know, I should put something, turn my attention to something I like. What I found in my own experience with that kind of thing is if that's the movement of my mind to say, oh, well, this really hard thing is happening, let me turn to something nice. I'll start thinking about flowers, and I'll start thinking about pleasant things. That energy of that difficulty kind of feels repressed or something. For me, at least, it feels like it's like that energy of that difficulty says, hey, you're not paying attention to me. But what I have found that energy is willing to let me do is to turn to something neutral. So that instead of trying to shift to something, you know, pleasant, it's like I think I said earlier, the not now practice. It's like, yeah, you can be here in the room with me, but I'm going to put my attention just on my feet right now, or I'm going to just do this useless gazing right now. So something really neutral, which, at least in my experience, that difficult energy seems to be more willing to ride side by side with. So that's a tool that I've used when I'm getting spiraling into something. Yeah, and I'm very happy you found this allowing place, because it is where the transformation can happen. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and would you pass the mic up? Oh. There's one heading over there.
Thank you. So a question about sort of awareness while walking, which we've been doing. I've noticed if you're like me and you do a lot of walking or bike riding, you have familiar routes and paths. And one thing I've noticed is the internal and external world, they're connected. It's very strange. I've noticed that, say there's a landmark that I pass, I start thinking about a thing. And if I pass that landmark again, I start thinking about the same thing. And it's not that there's something about the landmark that reminds me of it. It's like my brain remembers the context and what I was thinking about it and repeats it.
Yeah.
And it's actually very deep. I'll go bridge, I'll start thinking about the thing I think when I'm walking across a bridge or downstairs or anything. And I thought, this is really interesting. Should I do something with it? Like I've often thought, maybe remember what you think when you're on the bridge and try to think of something else.
I think, first of all, just noticing that you're noticing that pattern. This is the way our minds work. It's like they're associative. Our minds are associative. And it doesn't have to be that it's something on the bridge that reminds you of something. Yeah. It's just like that has happened. You've been on the bridge and that has happened. And it's like our minds will link those two things. Sometimes minds will do that more quickly or more readily than other minds. But so I would just notice that's what happens. And I would say, so you're on the bridge and you notice the idea or the concept or the emotion or whatever it is, just be aware of it. Also notice whether there is, because something else might be happening there. It's like, oh, I'm approaching the bridge. I'm going to be thinking about X.
Yeah, that's starting to happen because I've noticed the pattern. It's a very interesting pattern.
So just notice that also. You know, it's like we can almost put ourselves into it because we're thinking about it. You don't have to try to stop it. I mean, I would say it's probably not, it's unless it's something that is a kind of a an association that is creating reactivity, it might be useful to, when you're heading to that thing, put something neutral in your mind and try to stay with that instead of getting pulled into that. And just notice the kind of tendency for the mind to go to that thing, to that thought or that place. But just keep coming back to this other thing. But if it's just a kind of a, like you're in this place and, well, this is where the mind thinks about that particular kind of problem. And it's like, oh, wow, this is, the mind's putting things together in this way for that kind of, work situation or whatever. It's like sometimes our mind might find pockets of places where they're very creative. So, if that's what's happening, just that's fine. Just be aware of that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So sometimes you don't have to have a question. If there's just something you noticed in your practice today, then sometimes there's something interesting that can come out of just a noticing. So there's somebody. So let's, you know, we'll come back if there's another.
So sometimes there seems like there's a refusal in the mind to engage with awareness.
So what is that? What can you say a little more about that?
I have lots of experience. So it seems like you talked before about how the mindfulness lowers the
horizon
into the subconscious, and the subconscious contains some pretty intense stuff.
Yep.
And so there's a way that the mind, I think it's kind of maybe a self-protective mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
It says, you know, I don't want to, I'm not doing that right now. And I just wondered what your experience, if, you know, how that, in an ongoing practice, how that event is.
So what I would suggest is to explore something like this. So recognizing that as you're practicing, there's a kind of a sense of, oh, don't want to go there. You don't want to kind of be aware of that.
It's not that conscious. It's more of a noticing that the mind says, I don't want to do mindfulness now. I don't want to do that. So it's not an awareness of whatever it is that's bubbling in there.
I see. Okay. So is it like when you are thinking about going to meditate, you say, no, I don't want to do that, or
I'm, you know, I have a fairly ongoing practice, and so there are lots of circumstances, for instance, driving in my car, in which mindfulness is something that I have cultivated in that circumstance. And there will be some times when the mind says, not doing that. Sorry, I'm just, like, not doing that. And so I'm just curious about that.
I mean, so I would be curious about that. I mean, so you've become aware. There's awareness there that you don't want to be aware.
Yeah.
But you are aware.
Yeah.
So right there, I mean, that perhaps there's some way in which you think it means what being aware means. And it's like being mindful means doing something. Being mindful means paying attention to seeing while I'm driving, or being mindful means knowing my hands are on the steering wheel or something. You are aware in that moment. That's enough. You don't need to do anything more. There's nothing more to do. I mean, sometimes the mind can resist that kind of extra doing of some idea of practice. Well, as you said, you're already aware there. So, you know, just kind of notice that. You know, it's like, oh, well, there is awareness here. There's nothing more to do. No doing is necessary. That awareness will have some kind of momentum of some sort, you know, it'll be there for a little while. You don't have to try to hold on to it or keep it going, especially in daily life. I find this is my main daily life practice, really, is noticing when mindfulness comes, and then just kind of, you know, riding that wave. It's like it's here. It's here for however long it's here. And I don't necessarily, I mean, there are times when I have the luxury, let's say, to engage with that, you know, trying to stay mindful. Sometimes I'll do that while I'm preparing a meal or something. But much of the time in my daily life, I just notice when those moments of mindfulness come in, ride that wave for as long as it lasts, and then it's like just get on with the day. So that it's really cultivating that ease of mindfulness, not trying to pick up the backpack of mindfulness and say, I'm going to carry this around with me all day long. If we try to do that in daily life, we'll end up basically saying, not going to do that. And so really, instead cultivating this more the light touch of oh, here's a moment of mindfulness. Nothing more to do. I'm already aware. So already aware. Already aware. Just like, and that moment of awareness will have some kind of like forward momentum to it, and it'll stop at some point, and then you'll have another one later. So you don't have to pick up mindfulness and do it, especially in daily life. So this one exploration around noticing mindfulness returning, so you already know that. You are aware of that. So just emphasize that piece of it, and then let go of any idea of picking up and saying, I'm going to keep doing it. You know, unless it is a time when it feels like, yeah, I can do that, or that's something that feels organic or natural in that moment. Like for me, sometimes when I am preparing a meal, it's just like there's this little bit, just this little bit of prompting. It's like, yeah, stay aware, stay aware. Earlier, I talked about the light touch of mindfulness, of just enough effort to be here for this moment. And then do it again and again and again in our daily lives. And so going home tonight, probably you will forget to keep reminding yourself. But you may notice every now and then a moment of mindfulness returning. Just take that in. The analogy, or there's an analogy I like to share about this. Many of you have heard me use this analogy before, for the way this kind of light touch, moments of just light touch of mindfulness works. And it's riding a scooter, riding one of those little kick scooters the kids ride, not the motorized ones. You put your foot on the platform, and then you put your foot down and you tap the ground to get some momentum going. And you make a light tap, 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 tap. You tap quite a bit at first to get it going. But then you can start to ride once there's a momentum. If you try doing a like really strong push at the beginning, like push down really hard, well, you might get some momentum, but it might be a little wobbly. So the light touch kind of lets you get going and stabilize the balance on the scooter, just light touch, and then for a little while you can ride, and then you get familiar with when it starts to get wobbly, and then you can put your foot down and tap again. So that analogy of the tapping of the scooter, I like to say that that's the kind of effort that we use for the light touch of mindfulness in our formal practice, when we are, just recognizing, am I aware? What's here? Just that light touch. It's like tap, 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 just contact with experience. And then after a while, there'll be a little bit of a burst of mindfulness. It's like we get familiar with a little, like riding the wave of mindfulness, that little wave of mindfulness. And then we might start getting familiar with the mindfulness starting to feel a little wobbly, and then reminding ourselves again. So there's that way of bringing a light touch of effort in, helps us get familiar with the momentum of mindfulness too. And then in our daily lives, when mindfulness returns just spontaneously, it will return spontaneously, the more familiar we are with this experience of being aware, the experience of the momentum of mindfulness, the more we can just ride those little bursts. It's like we got lucky right in this moment to be aware there for a little burst of mindfulness. Just ride that wave and then get on with your day, and not bring a lot of efforting in to the practice. So is that, yeah. There's a couple more up there. Yeah, one over there.
Hello. I didn't want to ask this before, during the pause, because I feel like someone else probably asked it this morning. I meant to be here all day, but something unfortunate came up. So sorry if you've already answered this. In other words, during the sitting practice, so first of all, these instructions, this is the first time that I've heard the instructions of this style, and they remind me a lot of instructions that I've been getting in another group that I've been studying with, the natural awareness instructions from the Tibetan Dzogchen teachers.
There's a lot of similarity between the Mahamudra practice, the Tibetan practice, the Dzogchen practice, and this practice.
Yeah, they really, the whole self-existing wakefulness, it's already there, you know, nothing to manifest or fabricate, just drop into it. It's really parallel. And one thing that I've noticed from that practice that I noticed also today with these instructions is, for my mind, it's really, I just notice a lot of discursiveness, and it's almost like I have to add some kind of anchor to awareness, because the being in awareness is so brief, unless I've done some like shamatha or concentration practice to settle and still the mind first. I don't have a lot of, outside of like a retreat context, I don't have a lot of capacity to just be aware of awareness.
So when you notice that discursive thought, are you able to be aware of it, or do you immediately get lost in it?
Well, in the moment of noticing it, then I'm aware of it, but I would say that I don't notice that I go into it.
I see.
That awareness, it's like there's this real, like, there's awareness, and then I notice later, like, oh, and now I'm thinking about pizza or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
The slip between awareness and the thing, whatever the thing is very subtle, and my focus or my attention isn't precise enough to notice that slip until... And then I'll have a sitting where I've noticed the slip a bunch of times, and I'm like, okay, I think I just need more of an anchor here, because just noticing awareness for 1% of a sitting doesn't feel instinctively as what we're up to, if that makes sense.
So there's a kind of an intermediate place to explore, perhaps, there. And it's definitely the case that certain minds... may need a little bit more of an anchor than others. And it's also possible to begin to cultivate the capacity to recognize the shift of attention, because that's what you're missing.
Yes.
That's the piece that's happening, is that the mind is missing, that the attention has shifted to something else. And so start with a primary object. Pick something, but then instead of having the sense of, come back, you might begin to recognize, okay, I'm noticing the breath, for example, and then begin to recognize, oh, the attention is now moving to sound. So you start to recognize the shift of attention, that it's shifting to something else. So that's the place where the training can support you, is in beginning to recognize when the attention shifts to something else. And so by starting with a primary object, but not saying, okay, I got to stay with this primary object for a full sitting before I let myself open up. Instead, it might be, okay, I'm going to start with this primary object and see if I can notice when the attention starts to get pulled. You do notice that with a primary object, because you tend to, when you notice it's pulled, you come back. But instead of saying come back, it's like, oh, okay, the mind got pulled to that. Okay, so then kind of recognize that there was that shift of attention. Then maybe come back after you've noticed that, you know, so that you let yourself kind of start to get familiar with the attention that's going from this thing to this thing to this thing to this thing. And at some point, you won't have to come back to the primary object anymore. And it'll be like, we start to be able to do is to follow the attention. And that itself is very powerful to learn that skill, to learn to follow the attention. So that's a kind of in-between practice, between just like letting yourself stay with a single object for a while and then opening up. And yet, you know, so I would encourage you to play with that, but then, you know, it is possible some minds definitely have that that more of a tendency to kind of need a settling first. But you also, sometimes it can be an idea. Sometimes it can be a belief that you need that rather than an actuality. And so I would explore playing with it a little bit and see what happens.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear, because I've been trying to do that, but I just wanted to check, like, is it okay to introduce a little bit of that
absolutely
anchoredness, yeah, shall we call it, in order to get the mind a little bit more aware of its own shiftiness.
Yes,
before
absolutely
broadening, you know, out.
Okay. Especially if you're taking it as just okay, just land on something,
yeah,
and then begin to recognize it's going again, you know. So absolutely, I did talk about using an anchor some this morning, although it's not for long. But yeah. Yeah.
That's what I've been trying to do is maybe start there so that I can notice when the mind leaves.
Exactly.
And then once I get a little more hip to that, the attention can be a little broader.
Exactly.
And then eventually there's more resting and awareness.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fine. Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone else? So we only have about 3 minutes anyway, 3 or 4 minutes. So why don't we just close with a little bit of appreciation. One of the things about this practice, I would call this practice kind of a pure mindfulness practice. We are really exploring, can we be mindful of whatever is happening for us? So it's that mindfulness and joined with wisdom, joined with exploring the possibility of allowing and recognizing it as human experience. And sometimes in the discussion, the description of this kind of practice, it seems as though the love side is not so obvious. And yet, my sense of this practice, the inner experience of it for myself anyway, is that the very meeting of experience, you know, what we're doing here is we're meeting experience. We're exploring that intimacy. And that is a form of love. That's a form of connection. And so the allowing to meet experience can also open us to this appreciation for our experience. Appreciation not only for our experience, but for the practice, for our communities. And so let's just take a moment to consciously turn to that side, the appreciation for this group, this center, this community. Not just this room, this community, but also the wider community, that we have a place to come and explore our hearts and minds. That we have this opportunity is a great gift. It's rare in this world, actually, to be exposed to this kind of practice. It's rarer still to want to engage in it. So it's a beautiful thing, appreciating yourself for this, taking some measure of delight. And we engage in this practice not only for ourselves, but very naturally, without our even trying, and yet it can be helpful to be conscious of this, our practice does impact others. Our curiosity to meet the world in this way does impact others. And so may our practice be of benefit, of support to all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy, healthy, safe, at ease, May all beings know peace. So if a few of you would be